I'm going to raise a couple of questions, or I'm going to raise an obvious question. Actually, I'm going to raise an old question that everybody knows, but I'm going to try to make it a little bit sharper than it usually is. And then I'm going to go back to the beginning of the parasha, and if we get lucky, then before I finish, I'll somehow try to answer the question. But there may seem like some type of a disconnect there, so I apologize. The question I want to raise is the question which I think a lot of people ask. Yes, so I had a friend when Shabbat ended, I saw a message that a friend of mine had passed away. His name is Peter Weintraub. He lived in Los Angeles, and we were very close. He was a kind of relationship that we were very close, even though we didn't see each other all that often. So I told his family that we'll have this year in the memory of Pinchas Meir Ben Herschel Avram Halevi. So I should have an Eloi Neshama and a B'yamei Litzioshe. So the question that everybody asks, and if you never asked this, then you have to ask yourself why you never asked it, and that is, why does Avraham not protest or pray in some sense for Yitzchak when God tells him to do the most horrific, grotesque, morally grotesque thing imaginable? Take your son, your only son, the son that you love, and offer him up as an offering. So, as I said, people ask the question. Now, one of the reasons why it's a good question, and it is a good question, is because the body of work, which is the life of Avraham, until this point, we find that type of behavior. And the reason why I think it's actually a little bit sharper is when you note who are the people that Avraham generally prays for. And maybe, see, when it's going to be so stark, maybe that'll be part of the answer even, but just to quickly take a look at this, starting with, this way we'll get to finish the sources. I don't know if we'll get to start them. Start with number 20. On the end of page 4. So here is where God informs Avraham that Sodom and Amorah, it's actually not just, how many towns were destroyed? Yeah, no, but apparently there were five, it's the five towns. So, okay, so when God destroyed the five towns, which surrounded Sodom, okay, people are thinking now. So when he tells Avram this is what he's going to do, so Avram, he there's a protest going on. Now you can decide if this is a protest or a prayer. It sounds more like a protest, but I do think that there's an element of prayer perhaps there as well. The other time where we see a prayer coming out of Avraham, and again, this is real quick and real short, and maybe we don't notice it, was towards the end of last week's parsha, when God tells Avraham that finally his prayers come true. So which prayer is that? That he's going to have a child, that he's going to have a child together with Sarah. So that's source 21. V'yipol Avraham al panav v'yitzchak. And I want to pause here for another moment now and say something else, and I don't know how much we're going to go into this, but it's at the background, and it was why I had such a hard time. Anybody, I actually got one note this morning asking, is there really a shir? Because I didn't send out the source until 10:30 last night when I tried to get them out by Monday, because I had a very hard time. And part of it was dealing with something which could be called, although I can easily be accused of using the wrong term, but being that it's a postmodern term, it can mean anything that you want it to mean, and that's intertextuality. So now you learned a new word. So what exactly is intertextuality? Well, it depends how it's used. But over here, it's how a term or a phrase in one context helps interpret a term or a phrase or another context. The whole question becomes, if that's something completely subjective, then it's postmodern, or if it's deliberately part of the text, and then it's organic, not just in terms of interpretation, but in terms of actual meaning. So part of the thing that we find in the whole Avraham story are themes, words, occurrences repeating themselves. Motifs repeating themselves. One of them is the naming of Yitzchak and hearing about it and the laughter and so on. And Avram does this and Sarah does this. So this is the independently do it. But I'm going to say it again. There is this certain aspect going throughout the story of these events taking place. Over here in source 21, V'yipol Avram al panav v'yitzchak, Which, by the way, is also, even though Sarah gets in more trouble for it, there's definitely it's part of the patriarchy and so on and so forth, that Avram gets away with it and Sarah gets in trouble for it. But there's a very similar response, and the response is laughter. But then Avram adds something else, which Sarah would never say. Vayomer Avraham Elokim, lu Yishmael yichyeh lefanecha. Which means Avram is concerned about the future of Yishmael after he finds out that he has a different son who's going to be the son who's going to really be taking over, and the son who's going to be the person who Avram has really prayed for, and therefore apparently Yishmael is not. So there we have Avram praying for Yishmael. So far we have, and this is not in the right order because it should have been this one first, Avram praying for Yishmael, Avram praying for Sodom, and then we get another one which I think is really good, and that is in source number 19. Source number 19 is when Avraham goes and he goes down to the Negev and he goes to a place Ben Kadosh Lashur, which probably is not all that far from the Gaza Strip. That's the area that he's in. And he runs into this trouble with Avimelech. Essentially, Avimelech kidnaps Sarah. What happens beforehand is he says, this is my wife, my sister. And again, that's the same story. We've had that story before. And God comes to Avimelech in a dream and he says, you're a dead man, right? I love that. Pasuk Gimel v'yavo, in source 19, v'yavo li Elokim el Avimelech b'chalom alayla v'yom lo hincha met, you're dead. Ali Ishar, right? You notice how God has a Brooklyn accent sometimes. And he says, you're dead. Ala Isha Asher lakachta v'hi ba'ulat ba'al. Because of this woman that you took, and she's a married woman, and of course Avimelech's subjective morality is one that he would never sleep with a married woman, but he would certainly kill the husband in order to be with the now single woman. And this is actually very important in terms of the Akedah, because of reasons I've said in the past. Anyway, what else does God say to him here? Avimelech lo karav eleha v'yomer Hashem, Hagoy Gam Tzadik Taharog. And again, our intertextuality. Yeah, we know that phrase from someplace. I mean, that's part of the prayer that Avram had when it comes to stone. Halo hu amarli, and so on, achoti, and so on, betom luvavi, v'nekir nekapayim asiti zot, v'yom elav elokim v'chalom. Keep stressing that it was in a vision. That's also, I think, incredibly important, but I'm going to try to come back to that. He doesn't say your hands were clean because he grabbed somebody, right? I mean, by the way, it's good that these things never happen anymore, powerful men taking women, whoever they want. And he says, Gam anochi otcha michatoli. And he goes, yeah, I know that you're so innocent and so moral, and therefore I stopped you from sinning. That's the reason I wouldn't let you touch her. But then God adds on the price for what he's done. And this is a difficult price. Vata heshev eshetaish ki navihu. Now go ahead and return the woman, because the husband is not only is she married, she's married to a prophet. Vayit palel ba'adcha. And if you pray for, and if he prays for you, then you will live. Which means God is saying there's a death sentence on you. You're going to die. And the only way that you can be saved is if Avram prays for you. Now that's really interesting, because it's one thing for Avram to pray for Sodom. Although, let's be honest, the truth be told, Avram's praying for Sodom is an absolute absurdity. And I challenge any rabbi in the world today to behave like Avraham. I mean, I'm just saying, it's when I say it's absurd, I don't mean that the absurdity is that it makes no sense. It's Avraham, so it makes sense. But I think that you pick your bad guys, that if God would have come and said to some rabbi in 1939, I'm destroying Nazi Germany, whole thing is gone. So, okay, go for it. Now you say, well, that's a little different because they're trying to kill us. Okay, so if you would come and say that, okay, we're getting rid of Iran. God says, I'm going to arrange a bunch of nuclear accidents. The whole place is going to blow to hell. Go. It's gone. So what would the average person say? Okay, just let me know which date. We'll, and you. Sodom is the antithesis of Avraham. Avraham is based upon hospitality, Avraham is based upon kindness, Avraham is based upon decency, and Stone isn't. So therefore, if there's anything in the world right now that stands in his way of his mission winning, getting rid of Stone would really go a great deal towards the accomplishment of that. And Avraham is basically saying to God, come on, that's too easy if you get rid of Stone. I want to be Makar of them also. Or not. I mean, the Rav suggested that that's the reason that Avraham went down to Egypt, because he knew that Egypt was a morally challenged place. So he says, if I'm going to change the world, what's the best way to change the world? Go to the epicenter of immorality, let me change then, and everything else is going to be easy. But it didn't work out so well in Egypt. It wasn't as easy as he thought it was. But he says the way that he explained it, going down to Egypt wasn't an accident. It wasn't, there was no choice. There was no food anyplace else. It was absolutely designed by Avraham. You know, if I'm going to change the world, where do we start? So now you can decide where the epicenter of evil is. I don't know. I've already picked on the five towns today. So, I mean, I don't know what else to pick. I could pick on Vegas if you want. So where do you go? So you go to where it's really bad. But Avram's praying for these people. So that's what's really interesting. But now, who's Avram being asked to pray for? He's being at Avimelech to come, and he has to pray for him. Otherwise, he's dead. So Avram's going to pray for the person who kidnapped his wife and tried to rape her. So how many people are going to pray for their wife's potential rapist? So I'm just saying, just pay attention to what it says here. But Avram prays for these people. So when I said before that the question that comes up, so why doesn't Avram pray for Yitzchak? It's so much stronger than just, you know, I don't know what you were going to compare it to Stone, to Yishmael, to Avimelech, but it's really the combination of all these things. Avram is a man of prayer. We find Avram praying. We find Avram engaging God. And that's actually the point that we never found Noach doing. We never found any prayer within Noach. We never found any concern for others. Avram is concerned for others, prays for everybody. And of course, the one person that he doesn't pray for is, the one person he doesn't pray for is Yitzchak. So I'm saying that's what bothers me. That's how we're starting. And now we're leaving that. And as I said, if you behave, and some of you, that's going to be very difficult. Then we'll come back to this tour. You're looking around to see who's here that's difficult for. And everyone looks at someone else, so you like that. So if we have a chance, then maybe I'll answer those questions, or at least I'll try to. And if not, then, you know, you'll be like the person who goes to the rabbi's speech. Right? Here's right at the end of the year, he said, I became a heretic because of the rabbi. He goes, why? He goes, every week I come to the sermon, and I hear these great questions. I fall asleep. I never heard any answers. So you can all rest now, and let's go back to the beginning. The beginning for this week is the beginning of this week's parasha, which, of course, for us is almost the beginning, and it's source number two. So we'll start with source number two. Our second starting. Vayera elav Hashem be'elun e'mamre v'hu yoshev petach ol kechom hayom. And God appeared to him in the plains of Mamre, and he's sitting by the entrance to the tent in the heat of the day. Vayisa Edna Vayar, and he lifts up his eyes and he sees. Vinei Shlosha Nashim Nitzavim Alav, and there are three people upon him. Vayera he sees. Vayaratz Lakrotam, he runs towards the Mipetach Oel from the entrance to the tent. Vayishtachavu Arts, and he bows down to them. Now, these two verses, really, no offense, are very poorly written. My editors would never let me get away with this. This would not even get to my... I've suffered from behavior modification. And you have all kinds of dangling things over here. And you have... the subject is not stated clearly. I would have been forced to write, and God appeared to Abraham. God appeared to Avram. Vayera... El Avraham. Avraham's missing. Actually, Avraham's missing in both of these verses. I can imagine someone coming up with a new theory. Who was the person who God really appeared to? He's not here. And God appeared to him. Why him? Now, this should tell you something. That's problem number one. Problem number two, this is in no order. Problem number two are all of the sayings. Vayera elav, God appears to him. Vayisar elav vayar, he lifts up his eyes and he sees. And then again it says vayar and he sees. So how many times did he get to see? So the scenes over here is the second problem. The third problem is God appeared to Avram. He's sitting in the tent in the heat of the day. He lifts up his eyes. He sees three men. So what exactly is the content of the revelation that God has when God appears to him. Every other time we have God appearing, you have some kind of a content, some kind of a message. Something is being told. So over here, devoid of content, devoid of name, right? No name, no content, and lots of saying. So those are essentially our problems. And if that's not enough, Pasuk Gimel creates another problem. Vayomar, and he says, now the next four letters are Aleph, Dalev, Nun, Yud. And over here we have a huge machloket whether to whom Avraham is addressing. Is he talking to God, or is he talking to one of his visitors? Now, if he's talking to one of his visitors, it's a little bit strange, because he has three visitors. Why talk to one visitor? And if he's talking to one of his visitors, it presents them as being three men. I know that sometimes we get a little confused, because when it comes to Lot, it says he's got two angels. Three men, two angels. Here it never calls them angels, and there it never calls them men. So, and we just assume that these are two of the three. We'll see why we can make that assumption soon. But meanwhile, we like problems and questions. So over here, we have this problem as to what happens over here in terms of who exactly is he addressing? Who is this Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud? In the language of the Gemara, is this Kodesh or is it Chol? Is he saying God? Is he turning to God and say, you know, wait a second, Vayomer Adonai, imna matzati chen reinecha al na tavor me alavadecha? Is he turning to God and saying, please, I have to deal with these guys, they need some food, and I have to take care of them, don't move? So therefore, it's before the content, before anything was said, Avram says to God, just wait a second. Or is Avram speaking to his guests, and is he saying, sir, don't go away, I'd like you to stay here with me. So as I said, this is an argument. So let's try to solve as many of these as we possibly can. First of all, we started off with the previous section in source number one, the very end of last week's parsha, end of Perek Yud Zayin, where Avraham is commanded to perform the circumcision. He goes ahead and he does it. We end up Pasukav Dalid, Va'avram ben Tishim v'teisha shana, and Pasukav Vav, Be'etzam yomazen nimol Avraham yishmol b'no, v'kol anshei beito, Yilid bayit u'mikna kesef, me'et b'nechar nimulu ito, v'yera elav Hashem be'elone mamre. Which means don't be fooled by it being a new chapter, and don't be fooled by it being a new parsha. When it says, and God appeared to him, it's following that Avraham was the subject. Avraham performed the circumcision, right? Others with him, and God appeared to him. Which means that essentially one approach to this is that I don't have to say his name, because this isn't a new section in the sense, you know, that we already forgot what we read last week and we're just starting anew. No, this is the continuation of what was being read, and God appeared to him. So far, the first problem should not be as difficult. The second part is the lack of the content, and that I'm not budging from that. That's still going to remain a problem. He lifts up his eyes and he sees. Now, if we look at source number three, it identifies the problem I mentioned a moment ago, and it also draws an incredible message out of this. This is a Gemara in Masechet Shavuot. Kol shemot ha'amurim b'Torah ba'Avraham kodesh chutz mizeh shehu chol. Every time it says God's name, it's always referring to something which is holy. Except for here, shenemar vayomar Adonai imna matzati chen b'necha, which the Gemara here is telling you does not mean God, it means sir. This is chol. This is not holy. This is secular. Avram says sir to one of his guests. Why say sir? Okay, so that itself is still going to be a problem. Chanina ben Achi Rabbi Yeshua, Relazar ben Azariah, Mishum Relazar Hamoda'i Amru, Af Zeh Kodesh. They argue, they say, no, this name is also a holy name. That means that Avraham is in fact speaking to God. So before we go any further now, there's an argument who Avraham said that verse to. What's the big difference between them in terms of halakha? the kavana that the sofer needs to have when he writes that those letters. Should he be thinking he's writing God's name, or should he be thinking that he's writing something which is not God's name? Is he writing God? He's writing Sir. And yeah, that makes a difference in the writing of a Sefer Torah. Kiman Azla, who does this approach follow when they say it's Kodesh? That he said to God, basically, wait, I'll get back to you. Hadamar Yehuda Amarav. This is similar to the position which was espoused by Yehuda Amarav. Gadol hachnasat arachim yoter mi hakabalat pnei ashchina. It's better, more important, there's a value judgment here, to take care of one's guests even more than having a visitation from the Shechina, which means by very virtue of the fact that God had come, Avram turns around and says to God, wait, because I have a job to do now. I have to go and take care of these guests. Tells you that taking care of guests is more important than a visitation of the Shechina. Kiman, who does this follow? Ka'oto Zug. That approach says, Kol HaShemotam B'lo. Okay, Ka'oto Zug, regarding that pair who had said that this is in fact Kodesh. Then the Gemara continues and says, Kol Shemot Arum Belot Chol Chutz Mizeshu Hu Kodesh. Whenever it uses Aleph Dalet Yud by Lot, it's always Sir, it's never holy, except for one time. Shenemar Vayomer Lot Alehem Al Na Adonai Hine Na Matza Avdecha Chain Beinecha V'Tagdil Chazdecha V'Gomer. So we'll have to look at that in a moment. So this is referring to source number 7, verses actually 18 and 19. There are two. Now that's a little funny, because it says the plural. Lot said to them. Al na, right? In source 7, verse 18. Lot said to them. Al na Adonai. So what does that mean? But it continues. Hineinu matza avdecha chein be'enecha. So that's where it got more interesting. V'tegadel chastecha asher asita imadi l'achyot et nafshi. V'nochi lo uchalim litahara pen tibakteinu ara umati. Which means he's turning and saying, he's talking about life and death, and the Gemara over here prefers to understand that he's talking to God, and in this instance, Lot is saying a prayer. But I go back to my point of this intertextuality in the sense that we have this going back and forth. We have the same words being used. We actually have either the angels or the men, which is also going to be more similar than we possibly imagine. Over here, just note source 7 again. Pasuk Aleph. Vayavo shnei hamalachim. Why does it have the hamalachim? What does that seem to indicate, hamalachim? It's the same ones, but last time they were never called Hamalachim, they were called Anashim. But this is the point, that hey is the point that tells you, oh, this is two of the same three that were before. Because again, it's this continuation, just like God appeared to him tells you to go back to the Brit Milah over here, Hamalachim tells you to go back to the previous section in terms of the people that are visiting. Although I just want to read the next verse together with it, the two people come stoma be'erev, alot yoshev bishar stom. There's a similarity there. Avram was sitting by the tent. Lot is sitting by the entrance to the city. Vayar, he sees. Again, the form of this verse is similar to the one with Avram. Vayakam lekratam. Again, it's also similar. Vayishtachavu apayim arza. Of course, the one thing which is different, one of the things which is different is we don't have God beforehand. The other thing which is different is we don't have this difficulty of the multiple he saws. We only have him seeing once, where Avraham sees multiple times, and that's something which is somewhat difficult. And then Pasuk Bet, Vayomer Hine, Na... Vayomer Hine Na... And then what's the next word? Adonai, with the patach as opposed to a comma. What does that word mean? So that's interesting, because here it sounds like he is speaking to both of them, because it's plural of sir. So here he's saying vayomahine na Adonai surna el beit avadchem v'linu v'rachatzu, all in the plural. So over here he is saying sir. Sirs, right? So this is not Kodesh. This one is Chol. Yes? So that's what it was saying. Whenever it says Aleph Aleph Nun Yud by Lot, it's Chol, but except for that other one which was felt to be Kodesh. No. Okay. Yeah. Right. 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 Yes. And there is a wonderful work which at one point was part of our sources, but there were too many pages and we got triaged out. There is a wonderful work which is called the Minchat Shai. It's in the back of good editions of the Makorot Gedolot, and he tells you the history and the opinions of every single verse in terms of the Nikud, in terms of the Trop, and in terms of anything else that you may need to know. So that is discussed. And there may very well have been those who did not have a patach under this. There may have been those who had a kamatz under this one over here, which of course makes this more interesting. There's one person who I think did, and I'll show you who that person was in a couple of moments, but once again, I'll say the same thing. You need to behave. Otherwise, I don't get there. There is another word in that section which is debated, and that is back in source number 7, Pasuk Chet, where he turns and he says to the, I don't know, how do you call the people who lived in Sodom? The Sodomites? It just doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound good. Hine na li shtei banot, asher lo yodu ish, otsina ethem aleim. I have these two daughters who have known not a man. I will take them out to you. Vasulem katov b'neichem. Do with them as you please. Rak la anashim ha'el al ta'asu davar. So what does anashim ha'el means? So those of us brought up in Rashi, which is source number 6, Rashi writes ha'el is Ela. To these men, don't do anything. But that's not the only opinion. You can guess what the other opinion is, because it sounded like something else that we're familiar with, and both the Midrashim in 4 and 5 both say it. We can look at source 5. Shenishlechu b'mishlechot ha'el hagadol al tasu davar. These people who were sent on a mission from God. So we finally found the Blues Brothers in Sodom. And these people who were sent from a mission, who are on a mission from God, Mishlachat ha'el hagadol al tasu davar. And that is these people of God. So it's interesting that over here as well, that was in source number 4 or 5, explaining Pasuk Chet in source number 7. There's one quick note that I want to make, just again in terms of the parallels that take place. I don't know why we tend to look at Lot as being a loser, and we tend to look at Noach as being somebody who's very good, although the connections between them, I think, are far more than we sometimes notice. They're both saved. When there's destruction, there's a calamity that takes place with God's fingerprints all over it. They're the ones who were saved. Of course, you could tell me all the differences, boat, not a boat, all that doesn't concern me. But they're both saved. And at the end of being saved, they both get drunk, both apparently suffering from post-traumatic stress, and they self-medicate with alcohol. And then something else happens afterwards, which at least one of them, there's a cover-up. Well, literally, people cover them, but one of them, there's a cover-up, and the other one, we're told quite clearly what happens. Just to maybe tighten that a little bit, there, Rav Meidan has a suggestion. Now, somebody told me this last year, and I probably thought it was preposterous, and I immediately erased it from my brain, just like total erased it. And then somebody said it to me this year. Somebody had an idea, and I said, well, you know, I was thinking, this could mean this, this, and this. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's like really preposterous, but I guess it's possible, because it's one of these things you can't disprove. And then I mentioned somebody else. He goes, I told you last year that Rav Meidan said this, but what is it? You want to know what it is. Is that it says that Noach gets drunk, and then it says that his son comes in and uncovers his nakedness. So later on in the Torah, uncovering the nakedness means something else, uncover his father's nakedness. So what Rav Meidan suggested is that his son, Cham, slept with his mother. And he slept with his own mother. And who was the child that came out of this? Canaan. He goes, why is Canaan being cursed? Because Canaan was the illegitimate child when his son uncovered his nakedness. So as I said, and then later on in the Torah, Ma'aseh Eretz Canaan, it becomes far more interesting. So it's one of these things which is really, really interesting. She's making faces at me already. But it's fascinating. Right. It's, you go back and you read the psukim there and say, hold it, why is this not true? Not exactly sure. But the reason I'm mentioning it over here is because, it, again, it tightens the connection over here between these two stories. Again, not exact same stories, but there's one more point I want to say about this. You know that with Noach, he's described as being each tzaddik tamim bedorotav, okay, in his generation. Lot does the same thing. Lot is the one who saved from Sodom, which means he's the righteous person compared to everybody else in Sodom. So Noah is the righteous person in this terrible generation, and he's this righteous person in Sodom. So I'm just going to say is that, again, that we have these various parallels which are taking place, which are worthwhile noting, and you can now skip over source 8 and just notice that I bolded all the things that are similar. Source number 9, we finally get to the Ramban, and the Ramban's going to do something that he loves to do, and that is attack the Rambam. And the great irony of this is that I strongly suspect that most people today would not know this Rambam had it not been for the Ramban attacking him. So it's you have to be really careful who you attack. Sometimes it's the best PR you can possibly have, is have this attack. Now, the Ramban goes to field. I mean, this is one of the important Rambans. I only gave you a little bit of it. And essentially, let me tell you first what he says, and then we'll see how much we want to read inside. He says that the Rambam's position is that the first pasuk is, and God appeared to Avraham. The second pasuk is the content of what was the vision, which means, according to the Rambam, the vision is the three men arrived. So we had a problem. Where was the content? The Rambam solves the problem. Where's the content? God appeared to Avraham in the guise of three men who came and deliver a message and so on. So that is the content. So the Ramban does not love this. Uvasefer Mor Nevuchim, source 9, Nemar ki Parsha klal uprat. Amar katuv tchiliki nira ilav Hashem b'marota nevuah. First it says that God appeared to him in a prophecy. Ve'echai tahamara hazot ki nasa inav b'mara v'hinei gimel anashim. And that's the second time he lifts up. God appeared to him. He lifts up and he sees these people. That is the vision. Ve'yomer nama tzitchim necha zesipur mashom b'mara nevuah la'achar mehem hagadol shebehem. That he was addressing the most important of them. And then it continued to where it's underlined again. V'hinei the dvarav, according to the Rambam, is saying the whole thing was a dream or a prophecy. Lo la shasara ugot, v'lo asa Avraham ben Bakar, v'gam lo tzachaka sara, rakakol mareh. All the details in the story never happened. Sarah didn't bake, Avram didn't bring the animal. No, all of this is part of his vision that he had. V'im kain baha chalom hazeh berov inyan kechalamot hasheker kimato ela larot lo kol zeh. And the Rabbi is now picking on him a little bit too much. That means that everything is a lie. Well, it's not. I mean, you don't have to get into this either or, either this historically happened or it's a lie. No, this is the vision that he has. But as you can tell, the Ramban does not like this. V'nei lafi da'ato zot yitzterech loma kain b'inyan lot. But Lot's the continuation of the story. So he says, so Lot was Lot also a prophet? Were the Anshe Lot also prophets? Again, this is completely unfair of him, because if this is the vision, then it's still part of the vision. But his point essentially is a fair point. So when do we get back to the narrative? Was Sodom ever destroyed? Or that was still part of the vision? Which, right? Are we still part of Avram's vision right now? Right? Do you exist? How do you know you exist? Right? Because something hurts. That's how you know that you exist. I understand. But I'm going to say this again. The Rambam solves one wonderful problem, and that is, where's the content? And he says the content is what's being described afterwards. The Ramban ends up the
ailing. Oh, but not the problem. You can't see an angel.
Okay. Well, that's why they're men. Ve'ele dvarim sotrim hakatuv. Everything here which is said is contradicted by one important place. And what's that? The text of the Torah itself. Asur l'shomam afkila minbahem. You're certainly not allowed to repeat these things, and you're not allowed to repeat these things, and you're certainly not allowed to believe them. So essentially, he does not love the Rambam's take. It's interesting to note in source number 10 and 11, which is the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, the author of the Mor Nevuchim also wrote some other works. And over here, the Rambam writes, Kol ha-shemot amrum ba-Avraham kodesh av zeh shenemar Adonai imnan matzati chen. He says that's kodesh. If that's kodesh, that means that he was talking to God. Completely contradicts his approach to the Mor Nevuchim. Because the Mor Nevuchim, the whole thing's a vision, and he's talking to the people. So the Rambam over here says, no, this is kodesh. Harehu kodesh. Kol ha-shemot amrut belot Chol chutz mizeh al na Adonai hine matzati chen beinecha. And which verse did he quote? He quoted the earlier verse, which we had in our text with the patach Adonai, and the Rambam has it with the kamatz talking to God. So the Rambam quoted the wrong pasuk. So do with this whatever you want to do with this. But it's interesting because according to the Rambam, again, both of these texts are parallel then, that this is Kadosh and that's Kadosh, and it's the same opening. It's Avram talking to God, then it's Lot talking to God. Furthermore, in source 11, this is really in an obscure place, in the middle of the laws of mourning, the Rambam writes, Schar ha-levia, he's talking about guests, accompanying guests, Murba min akol, v'hu achok shechachku Avram avinu, v'derech ha-chesed shenahagbo. So in the middle over here, he gives homage to Avraham, who did chtas chesed, ma'achil ovrei drachim, he fed people who were traveling, umashke otam, and he gave them to eat, umelave otam, and where does he get all this? This is from the narrative, from the dream that the Rambam writes about in Mor Nevuchim that never really happened. Ugdol hachnasat orachim yakbala p'nei ashchina, and it's better to take in guests than, and you're allowed to turn to God and say, you know, wait here. Shine amar v'yar v'nei shlosh anashim. So the Rambam just took this whole thing that he said in the Rambam of Vulchem, and he doesn't rule that way in the Mishnah Torah, and I just support you two places, doesn't rule it. And again, if I were the Ramban, I would not have just gone and attacked the Rambam's position. I would have said the Rambam himself doesn't hold from his position, as is evidenced by at least two different places over here. So not only does he give the Rambam's position maybe more place than he should have, he says you're not allowed to believe this or teach this, then why do you just write it? Because he feels he has to attack it. But why not continue and say, because now everybody thinks that's what the Rambam believes, except for one person. Who's that? The Rambam. Okay, so it's very interesting to know what the Rambam actually writes in his book of Halacha. So again, I think that that is of significance. Okay. No. You can't. No, you can't. He's saying this is what happened. He's saying this is the history. This is what happened. He does. He says this is. So Avram's chesed was all part of it. No, he's taking.
His dreams are like that.
No.
No, he says he actually behaved that way.
He's using this narrative as his proof, and you can't you can't make that other point of. First of all, you can't say kadosh in the other one. You're being difficult. And the Rambam wouldn't be happy. No, it's just not what he...
We'll talk.
Okay. Source 13, Rabbeinu Bachaye, and here's where we're going to make a little bit of a shift, but you may not notice it. V'yisa'einu v'yar, and he lifts up his eyes and he looks. So let's go back to and he saw? Okay, let's go back to Pasuk Bet in source number 2. Pasuk Aleph was God appeared to him. Pasuk Bet was Vayisa ina vayar. He lifts up his eyes and he sees, and he's three people coming. Vine shloshan hashim nitzavim alav. The alav is interesting also. Vayar, and again he sees vayaratz lekratam, and he runs towards them. So Rabbeinu Bachaye points out the first one ra'a b'chush ha'ayin. The first one is he sees visually, optically through his eyes. Vosif shenit lashon, the second time it says vayar, livaer ki osif l'raot be'ein hasechel v'tponen ben v'hikir shehem malachim. So the second time is he identifies what they are, and right away he realizes they're angels. So that's interesting whether Avram does realize they're angels, doesn't know that they're angels, but he sees they're angels, and he goes running after them. V'yikratz lotam v'yishlach artzav ha'malachim ha'elu hayu, Michael, Raphael, and Gavriel. Who's... It's very good. Very, yeah, they shouldn't be eating. It's really not good for them. Yeah, there's also a whole approach that he sets them up. He gives them basa v'chalav, and later on by Matan Torah they try to stop Moshe, and God says, listen, you know, you guys came down, you had a couple of minutes, you already sinned right away, the Torah is not for you. You guys can't handle these laws. And there's fallen angels and so on. Okay, I told you, you're not going to behave, we're not going to get to the end. There are three angels here. Who's the fourth angel that's missing? Well, now we'll see who says Kriyat Shema Lamita. Who's missing? Uriel is missing. So where's Uriel? What happened to Uriel? He had the day off? Like, what's with Uriel here? Okay, so three angels are here. Michael ba levaseret sarau latzil et lot. Michael is the one on the right side and does good. That's why he's on the right. Rachamim. No, it's the same job. That's exactly the point. It's the same job. It's rachamim. When it says an angel can't do two tasks, it means that it can't do two contradictory midot. It's the same midah it can do. That's what it means. So continue. Because everybody gets confused on that, but that's exactly what this means. Michael ba'levaser tzarao latzil et lot. So now you realize that both of those are coming from the same place. It's the same mission. Shem sheishichod chesed v'rachim. Rufael l'rufaot et Avraham. Gavriel la'hafolch et stone. That's midat ha'gvura, comes to destroy stone. Although the way that he phrases it, you're right, he calls it two different shlichot, but it's chesed and rachamim. I'm not going to argue with the Rabbeinu Bachai here, but I'll argue with him anyway. Okay. Zehu shekatuv yu shnei malachim stoma be'erev. V'hu Michael v'Gavriel. Michael atzil od lod, v'Gavriel lafuch et stone. And he makes mention at the very end of this source, very last two lines, malach ha'chesed al shtei shlichot hayu shel chesed. It's that when it says there are two missions, they're both the same mission. It's the same mission of chesed. Before chesed and rachamim, he goes, ultimately, this is the same mission. Malach ha-rachamim al-refua, malach ha-din al-chorban stone, v'harvi'i kfar nigla lo bein abitarim v'hevenze. And the fourth one, Uriel, had already appeared by the Brit Abitarim, and you certainly should have known that already. So if you didn't know that... So first of all, what's interesting, what he just now did, is that he spoke about all four angels, the four angels that surround us, and he gave us a little bit, the Al-Sheikh writes in 14, V'hi ki al yedei mila zacha ki bahu yitbarach b'merkavat malachav, v'hi nichem v'asa merkava la'avraham. So this is something that we need to understand. Because if you didn't notice, we just now went into totally Kabbalistic terms. The Al-Sheikh, it's his prerogative. He lived in Tzfat. He hung out with all the great Kabbalists, and he normally hides it. In this case, he doesn't. The Al-Sheikh over here is telling us that Avraham underwent a change. This is not the same Avraham that it was in the beginning of last week's parasha. He is somebody else. The biggest evidence that he's somebody else is that he got a new name. He used to be Avram, and now he's Avraham. He's not the same person. The other change that he went through is now he got a Brit Milah. Now he got his circumcision. But that's where the Al-Sheikh is starting. V'hi ki al yedei milah zacha ki hu ba yitbarach b'merkava malachav. And at this point, God comes to visit him with the Merkava. Now those of us who are a little bit familiar with Merkava mysticism and so on, the vision of Yechezkel, the four different sides and the four different angels over here, he's saying that there's something has changed now. V'hi nicham. And he lets them, these three angels, va'asa merkava me Avraham. And Avraham now is going to represent the fourth angel. So that itself becomes very, very interesting. So yes, where's the missing fourth angel? So the Al-Sheikh, again, bothered by the same thing as Reina Bechaye, says, but it's Avraham is now the fourth one. Because Avraham is no longer who he was. Avraham has now become something else. V'zeu v'yisa'inav v'yar, ki nasa'inav l'mala me'atzmo, he lifted up, v'yar b'shchina al rosho, and he sees the shchina on top of him. So again, I want to remind you of what we say by the Kriyat Shema Lamita, b'shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael, mi'mini Michael, mi'smol Gavriel, mi'lefnai Uriel, u'mi'acharai Rafael v'al roshi, shchinat el. And that's what he's saying that happened just now, is that this transformation of Avraham being a place that the Shekhinah rests on him took place as a result of the Brit Milah that he went through, and Avraham is somebody else now. He's not what he was before, and again, we know people like Eliyahu going up in Merkava, and now becoming a Malach. So we never imagined that Avraham, and again, it's not the same, it's not like Eliyahu, he doesn't live forever, but the Al-Sheikh is saying something which I'm saying, at least I want you to hear, even if you don't understand a word of it, it's okay. But you know that there now there's something else going on over here, so let us continue. V'nei shlosha anashim nitzavim alav klomer. Shalora al tam ba'im merachok, umitkarvim al gashatam elav. What did the pasuk say in pasuk bet? It says, v'yisayna v'yar v'nei shlosha anashim nitzavim alav. They suddenly descended on top of him, which means they didn't come from afar, even though you can read the next pasuk. He says they landed. Continue. V'nei shlosha anashim nitzavim alav klomer shelo ra'otam ba'im mirachok u'matkrivim ad gashatam elav. He doesn't see them getting closer and closer. Miyad la'bit lamata. V'nei shlosha anashim nitzavim alav v'yaritam nitzavim lefanav keherafayin. These people suddenly appear because they're angels. They just suddenly came down. V'hu ki hu yitbarach ba'asoto merkava mei Avraham horid malachei merkavato Michael Gavriel Rafael v'hitzivam lefanav malbushim ka'anashim leman zchut et Avraham v'asidam. In order to somehow complete who Avram is, there is this merkava taking place, and I just don't know how much further I want to try to explain this. But he's saying that something has changed over here. Umashia nadun bikirbo ulay malachim hayu. Okay, we'll stop. The Orachaim is quite interesting. Look at source number 15, because there may be a hint of this already in the Medrash Rabbah. Omar ad shalomalti hayu ha'ovrim v'shavim ba'im etzli. Avram has a complaint to God. You know, before I had my Brit Milah, people used to come. I used to have the tent was open. People were here. So what's the background of this? That God came. He made the day especially hot so that people wouldn't come. So no one bother Avraham, because Avraham just had a Brit Milah and he needs to rest a little bit. Amar l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, ad shelo malta hayu b'nei adam arelim ba'im. Before you had the Brit Milah, there were people who were non-Jews used to come. Achshav ani u'b'nei pamalya sheli niglim alecha. And now I and the angels from above are going to reveal hadu dechteva yisana vayar v'nei shlosh anashim natzavim alav. And now you realize, and that's what it is. He looks up and he sees the three people there. Now you realize that what you thought the Al Sheikh was making up in his wonderful imagination, it actually may be over here. Vayar, what does it mean he sees? Because there's two vayars. Vayar bashchina, vayar b'malachim. He looks, he sees the Shekhinah upon him, and he sees the Malachim. So I'll say it again. This is quite interesting, because what it's telling us is that Avram is experiencing something else than he had ever experienced before. Okay. So now I want to say something which Rabbi Soloveitchik said, which is very similar to the Al Sheikh, but of course he had to say it in 20th century existential thought rather than say it in 16th century mystical thought. Soloveitchik asks the same question that everybody else asks, and what's that? Where's the content? Avram is there, God comes to him, there's no content. And then the three angels and so on, but where's the content? So he says that something has changed. Again, it's the exact same point. Avram has gone through the Brit Milah and Avram has changed. And now God comes to him just to hang out. Avram before then was alone, and now God comes as a friend to be there. That there is a change in their relationship, that it's not the kind of relationship, so like, why is this person calling me? That God only spoke to someone because there was a reason. Now God can come to Avram. Do you have any friends you go visit to and there's no reason why you came? Would you like your friends when you come to visit? Why are they coming to me right now? What do they want from me right now? So when God comes, we always think that there's a reason. There always has to be a purpose. And that was the premise of our whole question. How can we have a revelation with no content? So he answers, because now him and God are so much closer, and God came just to be there with Avraham. Or maybe we'll put it a little differently, that Avraham's religious experience right now is that God is with him. What made Avraham feel that God is with him? That he just had the Brit Milah. That he, and it's also interesting, he just did something. He just had a religious experience. And as a result of his religious experience, he became completely transformed. He is not the same person that he was before, and now God is with him. Now, how do I know that that was not just a subjective feeling that Avram has, that God is with him, the Shekhinah is with him? Because that's what it says in the Pasuk, that God appeared to him. But where's the content? Who needs content? Where? I understand that. But Rashi also is coming to solve the same problem of where's the content? Where's the content? So Rashi says, oh, it must be because he was sick. So again, I'm not disagreeing with Rashi. I think I'm saying it in a slightly different way, that when you read the Rashi, there's also content. Oh, he's coming to visit the sick. But no, this is more than that. This is that Avraham transformed, now has the Shekhinah with him. Now, after I said what I just now said, you'll have to ask yourself, so did Rav Soloveitchik read the Alshech, and he was just bringing it into his language? And it's quite possible that that's what he's doing. Because again, this is taking the idea in the mystical sense, and this is taking the idea more in the, as I said, more of a modern 20th century sense. Now, what do I want to do with that? I want to go back now and answer the first question that I raised. The first question that I raised is, why is it that Avraham doesn't pray when it comes to the Akedah? In all these other places, we find that he prays. Over here now, he's marching towards the Akedah. God comes to him and says to Avraham, you take your son, your only son, the son that you love, and so on and so forth. Yitzchak can take him, and you can offer him off as an offering. So let's pause there for a moment, and let's go back again. The transformation of Avraham took place in Perek Yud Zayin. Perek Yud Zayin is where the Brit Milah took place. There he was already told something which maybe we don't think of it in those terms. He was told that you are going to take a knife and you're going to bring it and you're going to cause your son to bleed. So of course you'll say that I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's what it says. But the son who you're going to take the knife to at that point will only be 8 days old. Avraham himself, right, that's the mitzvah. And that's what we're told in Perek Yud Zayin, that you're going to do a Brit Milah when the child is 8 days old. You're going to have a son. That Jesus, you're going to have a son. You're going to take that son. You're going to pull a knife on that son. And you're going to perform a circumcision on that son. Avram does it to himself as well. And he becomes completely transformed by this. And now Avram, as we said, choose your language, is sort of marching. And it's sort of like the Shekhinah now marching onwards. There's more things we should know about the Merkavah, but we'll hold off for a moment. Yitzchak is born, and Avraham goes, and he performs a circumcision on the 8th day, as he's commanded to, and everything sounds good. So, of course, neither us, nor Avraham, nor anyone else ever would have dreamed that that was just the introduction for the main show. And the main show is going to be when, again, God says, okay, take a knife, and you're going to draw blood from your son, and you're going to take him off, you're going to offer him as an offering. And at that point, hold it a second. You know, that, you know, we go from the micro to the macro, that's macro. That's not the same thing as a circumcision. This is a whole different thing. But that may not be the way that Avraham takes it. Avraham takes this, God asked me to do something. Avraham is marching together with Yitzchak, and they're marching towards, and that's very important where they're marching towards. They're marching towards Yerushalayim. They're marching to the Makom Mikdash. Whether the Yerushalayim or the Makom Mikdash is connected to the fourth angel, by the way, to Uriel, is also something which needs to be thought about, because it's the Shekhinah is now marching to go home. Avraham going up with Yitzchak to the place, to Moriah, to the place that the Beit HaMikdash will stand, is the marching of the Shekhinah going home to the proper place. That's what Avraham is doing. And now our whole question is what? Why, when it comes to prayer or pleading or negotiating, why is there silence? Why doesn't he talk to God? And the answer may be is because he doesn't have to talk to God. God is with him. When I say God is with him, this is Avraham, who's not the same Avraham as before. God is with him. He has this complete sense of serenity, this complete sense of the Shekhinah with him, and he's marching to the place that the Beit HaMikdash will one day be. And in terms of Avram's own religious experience, and I've said this many times, and I take this literally, the Rambam takes this literally, that his father once tried to throw him into a furnace and he walked out unscathed, which means Avraham knows experientially that Yitzchak is going to get out of this. He doesn't know how, he doesn't know the details, but Yitzchak, God asked him to do this, and the last time God asked him to do something similar to this was the Brit Milah. The result was this total religious transformation of becoming like the Merkavah. So I'm going to say it again, and now he marches up the mountain in this completely changed religious sense. But maybe what's most important about this is that now Yitzchak is going to be taken and he's going to be lifted up. Now Yitzchak is going to be elevated. Now Yitzchak is going to be transformed. Avram was already transformed. At some point, there's going to be a need for a changing of the guard. At some point, it's not enough that Avraham is this holy person like the Merkava and so on. At some point, Yitzchak is going to need to take that place, and maybe that's what Avram senses is going on over here. Just like Avram himself experienced at the age of 99 of having the Brit Milah and becoming completely transformed, now Yitzchak, yes, he had a Brit Milah at the age of 8, at the age of 8 days, but that's not the same. And now the two of them walk together. The two of them walk together. But what I've done with the Akedah, which I think that sometimes we don't do, is that we try to get into Avram's head in terms of a state of religious experience that he's going through right now. And I think that when we read the Al-Sheikh, or we listened to Rav Soloveitchik in terms of the beginning of the Parsha, and how Avram may very well be transformed right now, from before the Brit Milah to after the Brit Milah, he's not the same person anymore. And that's what they're trying to stress. It may be a very similar phenomenon now, that as he marches towards the Akedah together with his son, and there is this again, this horrific and grotesque and terrible thing that he's being asked to do, it doesn't make a difference in the sense. Again, we all know that there's a happy ending to it. And does Avram know this? Can he know this? I can't answer any of that. But what I'm trying to identify is that silence that we see in the beginning. And what is that silence from? The silence is from the sense that the Shekhinah is with him. The Shekhinah is right on top of him. The angels are right there. There's no talking with God. God is there. And here when we get to the Akedah, there may be that exact same phenomenon. The angel shows up. The angel is there. The Shekhinah is there. God is with him as he's marching. So it's not the same thing in order of searching for God. God is with him. It's still a terrible test. It's still incredibly difficult. But all that I'm trying to say is that on a religious sense, that this transformed Avraham may understand that there are certain times that you're silent. And what's the biggest proof that the certain times that you're silent? That God was able to come and visit him and not say anything, just to be there with him. So now God is asking him to do something, so he's going to now be with God, and he's not going to say a word. They're friends, as hard as that is to say, they're friends, they love one another, they march together, which I'm saying it's not just him and Yitzchak marching. God is with them, and that's Avraham's, that's his, if you want to call it subjective or objective religious experience. That is what he feels right now. God is with him, and therefore he doesn't feel the need to say anything, just like God didn't say anything to him immediately after he had the Brit Milah. Okay, you want to...